trying to figure out web accessibility as it relates to Drupal, and I feel like I understand it pretty well, and yet I wouldn't, you know, there's no way to condense that. So what I thought I'd do is I'm going to introduce myself and let you know a little bit about my background. I'd like to get to know a little bit about, I guess, particularly why people decided to come to this session, and then we can tailor the information to what it is you actually want to know about. Because it's all up in my head, so I might just as well tell you the things you want to know and not the things you don't want to know. So my background is rather eclectic. I, many years ago, did a computer programming college diploma, and then kind of forgot all about that, went off and did a number of other things, including some corporate training stuff. Decided I wanted to spend more money, so I went back to school and did undergraduate work in arts, which is in no way related to accessibility or web development. And then, you know, I actually spent 6 months working on a contract with the Adaptive Technology Resource Center at the University of Toronto. It's a department that's pretty unique in Canada, but I would even say within North America. And their real mission at the ATRC is to come up with new and innovative ways to make information and communication technology accessible to all people, whether it's people with disabilities, people with age barriers, people with cultural barriers, to make information technology and information accessible. Because the fun part is making the technology accessible, but at the end of the day, the goal is because we all have information that we want to share, whether or not that's marketing about a product or service or not-for-profit or whatever that is, educational material. We have information we want to share. We want to make sure that it's shared with the broadest possible audience of consumers. So I did that for a while, and then this past summer I worked for Open Concept Consulting into Drupal Shop in Ottawa. We've done some government projects, some not-for-profit education sector projects, and I was hired on at Open Concept for the summer for the sole purpose of trying to get as many accessibility improvements into Drupal 7 as possible. That went fairly well. It definitely slowed down over the last month because I've taken on a new position in Toronto, almost completely unrelated to web development, with CNIB as the National Coordinator of Advocacy. So for the time being, things kind of moved forward a little bit, have stalled a bit. Hopefully in the next month we will get as much possible cleaned up into Drupal 7 as we can. You know, not forgoing the fact that there are a few things that we maybe would have wanted to change that aren't going to be able to get in there anymore. So that's my background. I have, I guess, really been focused on accessibility for the last year and a half. And I was really excited. At U of T, when I was working there, we were actually working on a Drupal-based project, which is where I started to notice Drupal. And it's I think it's an exciting platform. I'm excited about the fact that we've been able to, over the last few months, raise a lot of, if nothing else, awareness and interest in making sure that the platform is accessible. And yeah, hopefully moving forward, Drupal 7 is not going to be a perfectly accessible content management system. It's going to be a content management system that can make some really pretty accessible websites, though, and hopefully then moving into Drupal 8, we'll be able to set a better system in place earlier on in the process with some milestones and the goal of ensuring that Drupal 8 is a fully accessible CMS. So maybe if we could go around the room, anybody who doesn't want to say anything can just, you know, skip it. But if I could get, like, you know, a brief little 30 seconds, 1 minute, who you are and why, what it is that made you go, gee, I should go listen to that talk about accessibility. And maybe we'll start on my right.
I'm Seth Cohn, full-time Drupal developer in New Hampshire, and we have had a bunch of projects that have to meet the Section 508 American for Disabilities Act stuff, and we pretty much, I mean, we read up on it a little bit, but don't really know all the ins and outs, and so it's an area we're interested in because we have people paying to make the stuff accessible.
And that's excellent, because it's it's hard sell to push accessibility if there's not a bottom line involved. It's, you know, it would be nice to make every site that we have to develop accessible, but unless there's billable hours being devoted to the changes that need to take place, then it's kind of a hard sell to push accessibility past the business end of a web development shop.
My name is Pierre Etienne. I work at Qubit here in Montreal, and this will be my first ever presentation on accessibility.
Okay.
So even though I have a few very vague assumptions, I think it will be very good going there.
Okay. Trust me, I understand.
We try to make it more readable. We try to make it so that screen readers read it, you know, with the solid sounds.
Right.
A at least. And make sure that the text are right. And,
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I work with Seth at Common Voices in New Hampshire. I've always wondered if we do the Ask Cynthia and all those tests, making sure our code's by the way compliant.
Right.
Is that really the same as testing it with a screen reader or some other device that, should we purchase one of those?
Well, there are three, I guess, ways to assess the accessibility. And I guess I'll start now by saying this. When clients come to me or any organization that I happen to be working for at any given time and say, can you make a site or this section of the site accessible? I say absolutely not. I would never, ever commit to a client, doesn't matter how much money they wanted to give, doesn't matter how much money they offered, I will never commit to making a site accessible. I will commit to making a site conform to a criteria for accessibility. Because accessibility can mean, so I have an iPhone in my pocket, and if I, you're not going to understand a word it says, but if I push the button, I can move my finger around the screen and it's telling me what the icon I'm over top of is. And I think this is a pretty freaking accessible, handy device. And if I couldn't move my thumb, it would be absolutely useless to me. So I'm not going to make a site accessible, but I'm going to make it conform to an accessibility guideline or standard. Now, there are some automated validation tools in the same way that you can validate your code to make sure that it complies to a standard. You can validate or attempt, I guess, to validate accessibility. The one I use the most often is the WAVE tool from WebAIM, which is wave.webaim.org. It's a pretty robust tool, but all it can do is check it's like the sentence that's grammatically correct and makes no semantic sense. It will make sure that you didn't do anything obviously horribly incorrect, and other than that, you're on your own. As far as getting a screen reader, I mean, purchasing a screen reader is not necessary. For starters, anybody who has a Mac running OS X Tiger or later has a built-in screen reader running on their system already. Now, mind you, it will only work with Opera and Safari, and it won't work with Firefox at this point in time. And hopefully that will be resolved by Mozilla by the end of this year, is what they've committed to me about, though they also committed Q2 of this year as well. So, and that's already gone by. Or you can, for the Linux side, I'm not sure if there's any Linux freaks in here, there's Orca, which is an open source screen reader for the GNOME window manager. And then for Windows, there is NVDA, which is a really good open source screen reader from, a not-for-profit called the NVDA Project. It's nvda-project.org. And they have actually received funding from, amongst others, Adobe, Microsoft, and I think Yahoo have all provided funding to that project. And that, so you don't need to buy a screen reader. There's lots available that you can test with and kind of get a sense of what's going on. What I would say is that you, with a screen reader and the best intentions in the world, still don't know what you're looking for. I mean, number one, if you're going to test a site with a screen reader, you need to do it with the screen turned off or looking away from the screen. But secondly, you don't know how a screen reader user uses their screen reader. You don't know, I mean, because to you, it's all going to be hard. So you don't know what makes it easier for somebody who does it every day, all day long. But it gives you a good sense of, you know, when you get to part of the screen when there's where there's supposed to be an image that's a link to something and the screen reader ignores it, and you know that you've done something wrong. Or if the screen reader says, you know, r703.jpg, and you go, gee, I wonder where the link r703.jpg takes me, you know you've done something wrong, but you don't necessarily, you know, you're not getting the same experience at all. Exactly. Right, and I would say that the simple answer to that question is that we already have that. I mean, there's the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, and conveniently they've broken the guidelines down into priorities 1, 2, and 3. So when I look at a site, I start with just going over it and in my head marking down, here are the big obvious things that need to be remediated. But then starting with the priority one guidelines, because those are the way they break down the web content accessibility guidelines, and I'll talk about this again in a minute, just in case some other people show up. There are websites that are absolutely not accessible. There are websites that are accessible and really hard to use, and that's priority one. If you hit all the checkpoints on priority one, you have a website that people are gonna be able to use, and it's possibly going to be difficult for them to use it. Priority two is, or double A, they switch back and forth in their language between 1, 2, and 3 and A, double A, triple A. Priority two takes that site and makes it a lot easier to use for persons with different types of disabilities. Priority three can make certain aspects of sites even easier to use for persons with very certain disabilities. I tend to, unless a client has a specific reason for needing it, I would tend to lead a client away from the AAA compliance to accessibility guidelines, just because there's a lot of extra effort required with not so much of a payoff in the end for too many groups of people. And at the end of the day, accessibility, like anything else, is a business case, and you have to make the argument of, why are we spending the time and money doing this? How many people are going to be benefiting?
Sorry.
I'm Lisa. I'm with your office, and I'm front-end person doing user experience. I've done quite a bit of accessibility.
Okay. Okay.
But they don't allow people to, technically I'm not supposed to be using it for testing.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm just using the, you know, the
demo version, right.
Is there a way around that? Are you aware? Or what do you recommend to do?
I mean, I guess that there's two questions you're asking. Is there a way around it? Which is, yeah, just do it anyway. I mean, I guess that's the way around it. Okay. I mean, the other question is, people do it all the time. People who teach accessibility recommend that people do it. I mean, the one side with and where I work at the moment, which is CNIB, where I am in really no way at all in a web development role, is a like completely hardcore JAWS-centric organization. Now, there's pros and cons, and I suppose the pro is that 75% of North American screen reader users, at least, use JAWS. And so you're getting a pretty good sense of what the majority of people are experiencing if you're using JAWS. The downside is JAWS is not necessary. In the same way that every browser fails at implementing standards or chooses to implement them in their own creative way, which makes all of our lives more difficult, screen reader screen readers, and screen readers are technically classified as user agents, just like a browser is. Screen readers implement standards in the same way that browsers do. They pick and choose, and you know, sometimes for the better, they go, "Oh, we're going to do this a different way because we think it's actually going to serve the people that use our user agent better than if we followed the standard." And that's all wonderful, with the exception that, you know, I can test a site with Safari and VoiceOver on the Mac, and then I can test it with Firefox and JAWS on the PC and get two, well, if it's Drupal, I can get two quite different user experiences out of that. And we'll touch on why that is in a minute, hopefully, if I remember to do that. But I would say NVDA, and probably having the same problems with standards, is a nice open source screen reader, and I think there's even been articles written. I know that a fellow who works for Mozilla in Germany, Marco Zihi, has written an article about, you know, using NVDA for assessing the accessibility of websites. So that's worth looking up. Anybody else?
My name is Matt Quartz. I work with a company called OpenClose, which is based in the U.S. So clients have in the past asked us to meet the 508 accessibility requirements because our clients are, because they're American clients and have American visitors, but usually people don't also offer to pay to
Exactly.
Yeah, so we've never done any, serious research into how to make the site accessible, but I would love to learn, if only so I can tell people that it's not as hard as they think, and so
and
we should budget some money for that.
Exactly, and it's not, I mean, the first site, particularly with any particular platform, I mean, the first site that I did the first Drupal site I did an accessibility audit on, and it was a small Drupal site that we were putting together at Open Concept, and I said, you know, don't get scared when I tell you how many hours I'm going to estimate into the budget for this project to do the audit on this site. And I gave them the number, and they're like, oh, okay. I said, don't get scared. Because the first one with any particular platform is the hardest one. The second one is all right. And the third, like after that, it's easy. Because after the first one, you know, the beauty of Drupal is every, theoretically, every bit of output XHTML is themable, at least in core. That gets a little more sketchy when you go into contributed modules. But all of the output, everything that the user interacts with, for the most part, is a themable function. And so when you start to notice this pattern of accessibility problems, then you start to put together, and most shops, I would say, that do Drupal development start with a base theme that's not a, you know, that's, yeah, like we'll take a theme, and I think at Open Concept we almost always start with the Zen theme, but we don't really. We start with our own custom sub-theme of Zen and then modify that for each client unless they've requested something different or something in which that would not be the best way around. And so you can start building into the sub-theme or the theme that you use as your base theme for clients fixes to the common problems, which the first time might take 45 minutes or an hour to fix, but then it's fixed for every other client that you ever deal with. I mean, and that's obviously the goal of the accessibility improvements that we're trying to put into Drupal 7, is that we actually remove even that part of the burden from developers by getting a number of those things fixed already. And we've gotten some of them done and some of them not, and hopefully we'll get more of them done in the next couple of weeks, and if not, then Drupal 8, we will have a more robust plan for how to ensure that it becomes the most accessible. Really, this time around with Drupal 7, because the real organized effort at accessibility started so late in the development process, this time around was really more about awareness than anything else, and getting big contributors to be interested and aware builds up the workforce for next time around. And next time around I don't have to start by saying, does anybody at all know what the word accessibility means? You know, next time I can start with, okay, look at this thing that we've been taught, that we talked about it for a couple months, it didn't get fixed, but we are so close to fixing it. That'll be easy to get in at the beginning of the next development cycle instead of, you know, trying to squeak it in at the end of this development cycle. It's a disappointment in some ways that it didn't, that some things don't get in, but it's, you know, every step is a step forward.
My name is Jan Ott. I am a web developer at Kumbi.org, and I'm here to learn about how to make Drupal sites more accessible as a web developer.
Okay. And is that anybody? Everybody? Did anybody else come in partway through that?
I'm Angie Byrd, and I came here because A, I want to meet you, because you've done a tremendous job spearheading the accessibility movement in Drupal 7. And he's not kidding that he literally had to like say, okay, guys, this is what accessibility means. This is where we're at. It's starting really from ground zero and done a tremendous job just even raising the awareness in the community about accessibility and why it's important. You know, just the very simple things that we can do to make Drupal better. So first of all, I want to make that and say thank you. But also, I guess I was curious to know your take on sort of the difference between Drupal 6 and Drupal 7 in accessibility and some of the things that we've done. And particularly, I wanted to know, like, your, and maybe not as part of this, because I don't know if it's of interest to everybody, but I wanted to touch base with you to find out if you could get to your top 4 or 5 additional things in Drupal 7, what they would be.
Right.
That would make a big difference.
Well, you know, and part of that is I feel kind of disoriented being here in the fact that I have been almost completely unplugged from the issue queue for the last 4 weeks, moving, furnishing a new apartment, starting a new job that's, you know, completely unrelated, though I won't say completely unrelated to accessibility. I do provide a little bit of consulting. CNIB has web accessibility consulting, I suppose, department. I'm not exactly sure what the name of the department is. And what they do provide training and website audits for different organizations across the country, normally targeted at, you know, large to enterprise scale business as opposed to smaller sites or smaller organizations. Though the training is targeted towards anybody who's a developer. And so I provide a little bit of consulting to the people that work in that department, but I've really been disconnected. The biggie is the forms issue. Everything else, you know, is there are most of the other issues are either not as important or themable, but the forms issue is really a pretty big one. And, you know, if we're talking about a business card site, then, you know, it doesn't really matter. If we're talking about anything that where we're trying to encourage interaction from users, it matters quite a bit.
Could you share with people what the forms required?
Right, forms in Drupal, I mean, it's amazing on the one level, and the only reason that we can even attempt to put accessibility into Drupal is because of the way the system's been designed. And though I would probably lean towards object-oriented design, nobody asked me to vote on that. Because I'm like sitting there looking at an array or a whatever, like the forms object, thinking, why is that not an object? You know, why? But it's not an object, it's a whole bunch of nested arrays. But other than that, it's the only reason that we can attempt to have consistent accessibility in Drupal is because Drupal is highly structured on the back end. There are themable functions, there are hooks, there are objects or pseudo-objects, and that we can tap into the architecture behind that and make changes that go across every single implementation of, or every instance of a certain thing. So if it's a form with, let's say, because one of the examples I was going to use today is the checkbox, the themable functions for a checkbox or a group of checkboxes, I think the title of the issue is like form element labeling is inconsistent and inflexible and bad for accessibility. And it's inconsistent because we have a checkbox or a radio button. The label for those elements are output by the specific theming function for the element. Every other form element label is output by the general theme wrapper for form element labels, or for form elements. Well, why do we have two different types of elements with labels being created on their own, every other element where the label's being created in one, you know, overriding wrapper class or wrapper function? And there's a reason for that, which I won't get into, but it was to fix what was at a time a perceived problem. And it fixed the problem at the time, probably not the best way to fix the problem, and that's fine. But there's an example of inconsistency. So I, as a developer, if I go, gee, there's a problem with how this site is producing labels, or it's not producing labels either correctly, or just it's just not producing the labels the way I'd like it to be producing labels. Well, I now have to go through and hunt and hunt and hunt and hunt to find every function that produces a label. With the checkboxes, the place where that really comes in damagingly is if you're in the administrative side of a Drupal install, and for example, if you're on the page that lists all of the installed modules, if you look at the page visually, looks perfect. If you look at the page in the markup, and this is where accessibility and semantic markup cross over with each other, step one to having a site that is accessible is having a site that doesn't just have valid code, but has semantically correct code. So you can have valid code using a definition list. Every single place on your website where you have a list of items, you can use a definition list. Or hey, you can make a list of items using line breaks and graphics to represent the bullets. And that is valid code. But it's not semantically correct code, because the reason that we have a structured markup language is to provide structure, meaningful structure, to the documents that we're creating and trying to get people to consume. So with checkboxes, since it's automatic, every single checkbox, every single radio button in Drupal, if there is a title set for that element, wraps the checkbox or radio button in a label and pushes the title or the label for that radio button or checkbox to the right of the radio button or checkbox, which in probably 99% or 95% of the cases is exactly what you want, unless, like on the listing modules page, you want the checkbox in the first column and the label in the second column of a table. But that's broken. You can't do that with Drupal. Well, you can't properly do it with Drupal because it's forced on you that the title be set directly beside the checkbox or the radio button, which is a huge flexibility problem, which I've tried to argue. Like, you know, people are like, oh, well, why does it matter? I'm like, because some people might want it on the left, and some people might want it on the right, and some people, like on the module list page, might not want it to show up at all. And you can label, semantically, structurally label a form element without having any label show up on the screen by using the title attribute of the element. And so that's not a problem, but we don't have any flexibility within the current form system to allow that to happen, to allow the developer or the person putting together the theme to make a choice about, for any particular form, for any particular form element, where should that label appear. And that flexibility problem is not just related to checkboxes and radios. There's no form elements at all do you get a choice about where the label appears. They're bound directly to each one of the input elements. Where that becomes a problem, and one of the actual, not just an accessibility problem, but a lot, like just an error, an oopsie, that was in the Drupal 6 system, is that where it goes to do the check for a checkmark box or a radio button, and it says, is there a title? And if there is, that spit out a label wrapping this thing and print the title to the screen. And if there's not, we're just going to spit out the radio button. It checks to see if the title is null, which, when you're thinking about it really quickly, makes sense. If the title is not null, then print it on the screen, unless the title is not null and empty, in which case now you're printing an empty string on the screen, which, once again, does not pose a problem when you're looking at the page. It looks fine because you've printed out zero spaces onto the screen. But unfortunately, the checkbox or radio button is still wrapped in a label. So now we have a label open tag and a checkbox tag and a label close tag, but there's actually no label. Unfortunately, a screen reader thinks that there's supposed to be a label there, and so it just assumes that since this element's wrapped in a label, that's the label for the element, and doesn't think to look to the next column over where the developer has properly wrapped the, what is supposed to be the label for that check mark in a label tag with a for attribute pointing to the correct control to be labeled. The developer's done everything they can do properly to get the flexibility out of the system that they want out of it. Unfortunately, the system, because it's broken, doesn't allow technology to take advantage of what the developer's done because it's still spitting out that empty label. Now, that is as easy of a fix as switching is null to isn't empty in the logic for the theme checkbox. And I mean, that's something that when we developed our kind of accessible Drupal 6 sub-theme at Open Concept, lie down, please. Down. Hey, down. 1 second. Hey, lie down. All the way down. There you go, rest. When we developed the accessible Drupal 6 sub-theme, that's the one we did. And it's the same exact same logic error for the theme checkbox as it is for theme radio. And so you just go into, I mean, it's like 20 lines long. It's not all that complicated of a themeable function. And we just overrode that function by replacing, you know, the is null or is not null with a is not empty. And that solves the problem. You make that one little change, and it stops spitting out the empty labels, which takes pages like the list of modules that has the table with the check mark in the first column, the label in the second, and makes that page, or the checkboxes at least on that page, accessible, as opposed to the inaccessible version that comes by default with Drupal 6. And sadly, at the moment, will come by default with Drupal 7. But we'll probably clean that one up. If we don't get the major form overhaul done, we will get that tiny little thing cleaned up. So that, you know, because that's actually a bug. That's a literal not the way it should have been. Not just a we didn't design it properly problem. It was an implementation problem. So that's the form issue, that there's a lack of flexibility for designers as to how forms are displayed on the screen, or how they show up in source order. And some of that lack of flexibility actually makes it more difficult to have an accessible site. Luckily, forms is an area where there's like theme override after theme override after theme override, and a lot of the issues are generalizable into a way that you can just do your theme override once and then not worry about it across a number of websites. You still don't have the flexibility that I'd like there to be for putting labels where you want them to be, but you can at least make sure it's accessible. Check boxes, radios, and date, and I emphasize it because it's a little confusing that there's a theme checkbox and a theme checkboxes. Checkboxes and radios are just a list of checkbox and radio elements. Date is kind of a strange form element because it just contains the constituent elements that make up, you know, month, day, year for a date. Though I think the design problem when that was originally being developed, when those three element types were being developed, there should have been a pause because we have a themeable function for theme form element, which is the wrapper for essentially every form element. But what nobody took into consideration is that checkboxes, radios, and date are not form elements. They themselves are actually form element wrappers. They wrap a set of form elements. And so with checkboxes, for example, if I have three checkboxes, and the general practice is if you have a set of checkboxes or radio buttons, probably not so much if it's a yes, no, though it's, you know, subjective whether or not any particular guideline of accessibility would care too much one way or the other. But if you have a number of checkboxes or radio buttons or the form fields that go into composing a date, you would generally speaking want those wrapped in a field set with a legend. Now, for people that aren't too familiar with how the markup works, a single label can be associated to one and only one form element. A field set, the legend that's associated with a particular field set is associated with every form element found inside that field set. When you're using a screen reader, for example, and you get to a checkmark box that just has a label associated with it, then you hear, you know, checkmark box, the text that's in the label. If you get to a label with a checkmark box with a label that's within a field set legend, you hear legend, checkmark box, label. So that if you have, you know, 15 checkboxes that you know, by the time you get to checkmark box number 7, where somebody who can see would just glance up and remind themselves of what question they were answering, if you can't see the screen, you really do need that reminder to prompt you when you get halfway down through the list, what am I answering again? Like, what's the question? I have no idea. And then you have to, like, hit the up arrow a whole bunch of times. Oh, that's the question. Hit the down arrow a whole bunch of times. Instead of just having done it right. So what would be nice to see is radios, checkboxes, and date to be wrapped in a field set. And what they're currently wrapped in is just the same container, the same div container that every other form element's wrapped in. And so that's the form labeling issue, and that would be the biggest improvement, not only to accessibility, but to just, you know, plain old semantic flexible markup that there could be, from my perspective.
I have a question about
that. Yeah.
So one of the reasons that the checkbox versus checkboxes is set up is so that, for instance, you can have related checkboxes or radios spread around the screen. If there's a field set, doesn't that force those to only be grouped together? And it becomes harder to lay it out other than as this is a single group.
Right. I'm going to say, not being, it's been so long, thank God, that I've had to touch CSS. I'm going to say, I would like to hear the use case where you have a logically grouped set of checkboxes that are not also, to one degree or another, visually grouped. And I'm going to argue that whatever your use case is, that from the perspective of usable design, you're probably doing it the wrong way. Because for anybody, if there's going to be a logical association between checkboxes or radios, then you're making your user's job of giving you the correct information a whole lot easier if you visually group those elements closely together. As for, is it possible to float one off over here and one off over there? I'm going to say likely it is, but it, you know, would take some skillful CSS to make sure they all show up in the place you want them to in every browser combination there is out there. So yeah, that's the form labeling issue, and it was a big one, and I thought I was being wise months ago, and I took the pragmatic, let's get the least amount of necessary improvements done. And then there wasn't a whole lot of manpower support, and then luckily a couple other people came in, but they had a very different mindset than me. They're like, oh wow, if we're going to tackle this problem, let's go all the way. And though that was good and exciting and energetic, it unfortunately served the alternative purpose of making it such a complex issue that it ended up, you know, not getting tackled fully. There's a couple other issues that absolutely need to be fixed for Drupal 7. Well, I say absolutely, I mean. And they are the only two accessibility issues. I was very, very stringent with using the term critical for the status of any accessibility issue, because none of them are critical except that drag and drop tables and autocomplete. Oh, no, actually, I don't even think I marked up autocomplete as critical. Drag and drop tables, and there's an issue with, which almost no end user would ever experience in their life. There's an issue with simple test, which is also critical, where the link or the little arrow you need to click on to expand the list of tests is inaccessible to a keyboard-only user. You cannot tab to that. It's just a JavaScript on click event, I think, that's been attached to an image element, which is, you know, great if you can click. But if you can't click the mouse, and I mean, screen reader users are somewhat more fortunate than in one sense than keyboard-only users who don't have a screen reader, because we have the ability to click on things just through the nature of screen readers, providing you the ability to, it says, okay, well, you know, you're here, and we know that that's at X, Y, whatever, and we'll virtually move the mouse there and click, if that's what you want to do. A keyboard-only user doesn't have the ability to do that unless they have some adaptive software installed that provides them the ability to do that. And there is software out there that, you know, allows you to control the mouse with the arrow keys, but who's going to freaking do that? I mean, it's not. You don't do it unless you need to. But what that does is takes people like me, who would say, oh, gee, I'd really like to help improve Drupal. Well, it's kind of hard to, once you get into the bigger issues, it's really hard to do it if you can't use the test cases. And if I can't expand the list of, you know, one of the other really, really simple issues was that once you get a test to run, it comes back with little pass, failed, pass, little logos down the left-hand or the right-hand side telling you which one passed, which one failed. Those logos didn't have, well, worse than, and here's a, I guess this is just a little tip that most people would overlook. As far as giving an alt attribute to an image is concerned, there is an image with no alt attribute, which, generally speaking, a screen reader will just read you the name of the image file, which in most cases is not helpful, but sometimes is. If you have an image with an alt attribute actually set, the screen reader will read you what the alt attribute is. Sadly, with this situation, which actually did get fixed, the images had an alt attribute, which was a null string. So the screen reader just read nothing, not the zero. There was not image, just nothing at all. He didn't even know. Now I knew there was a status column of the table, because right there it says status. But there was nothing in the status column. And I actually, in order to find out what test cases passed and failed, I actually had to open up the source of the page and read through the source manually to find, you know, here's the status column, and oh, there's a fail something, or I forget the name of the image, watchdog something or other, and let, you know, to find out which test case. That's bad. And now that's been solved, but you cannot use a keyboard to expand the list of test cases. Well, unless you disable JavaScript, which...
Well, I was just going to ask that it sounds like disabling JavaScript helps, but sometimes you'll have somebody who's using a screen reader and have JavaScript.
Well, almost always. JavaScript is not a problem for... 5 years ago, maybe. I have only been using a screen reader for 5 years, and I would say that in the last 5 years, I have never personally myself disabled JavaScript on a computer as a standard function of using a screen reader. Now, maybe before that it was a bigger problem, but within the last 5 years, JavaScript, screen readers love JavaScript. They are user agents. If I click on something that makes something show up over here, the screen reader knows that that happened. And the way that most screen readers work, well, every screen reader, the term screen reader is actually a misnomer, because it doesn't read the screen, generally speaking. What it does is read you the information that's on the screen, but it's not reading it from the screen. So for Windows-based screen readers, what they do is they take the DOM, not the source code, but they grab the DOM of the page from the browser, and they parse the DOM in whatever way they parse the DOM. And so they don't actually grab the DOM, because that's wrong. They grab a pointer to the DOM, so they know if something has changed in the DOM through JavaScript. On Mac and Linux, so they all use a pointer to the DOM to decide what's where and how to allow the screen reader user to navigate the page. On the Windows side, what they do is they take that DOM and create a virtual document out of it that you navigate, in the same way you'd navigate a Word document or something like that, or a text document. On the Mac and Linux side, they don't create the virtual document. It's a very object-oriented interaction model of navigating through the DOM on the Mac and Linux screen reader side. On the Windows side, it's a document-oriented way of navigating through, but regardless, they all use a reference to the DOM in order to get the information needed.
So as an example, with the current jQuery Ajax-style loading of form stuff, where I'm thinking of hierarchy select, where it starts with a single drop-down, you pick something, it now adds in the
second
next element.
Third,
is that going to work correctly on a screen, or is that an accessibility issue?
No, depending on the implementation, but there's no reason why that should not work correctly for a screen reader or somebody using a screen reader that's been, output in the last 4 or 5 years. That should work fine. Now, there are quirks with some screen readers that users know about. For instance, on some sites, when that happens, you have to, on the Windows side, that virtual document it creates is called the virtual buffer. Sometimes you have to, once you've done an action that you are, and you go, well, nothing happened, and you're like, okay, I'm pretty certain this was supposed to make something new show up, you can refresh the virtual buffer by just hitting a keystroke, and then it interrogates the DOM just to make sure it didn't miss an event that fired that was supposed to change it. But it's, that's not a problem at all. JavaScript is not a problem for screen reader users. On the nature of it just being Ajax JavaScript changing the DOM, that's not a problem. But it is a problem if you're using JavaScript in the sense of, let's use JavaScript to allow us to drag and drop these table rows. And it is not, if you're a keyboard-only user, I believe it is possible to use the keyboard to drag and drop table rows, reorder table rows up and down a table. But because screen readers are kind of like the first-class citizen in keyboard bindings, they put themselves right at the very top level. So when you hit your down arrow key to try to move that table row down, the screen reader grabs the arrow key and does its own function with it. It doesn't pass the arrow key on to the application in order for it to use the JavaScript to use it to move the table row up and down. And so there are ways to fix that. The easiest way, the one that I think is currently being worked on, is just to provide a little link that people can click on to expose the weight column on those draggable tables, which I have heard more than one person who doesn't use a screen reader at all say, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? Because sometimes when I'm on a table with like 18 million rows, it would be nice just to be able to set the weight of something manually and not have to like drag all over the place. And so that would be probably something that the graceful enhancements, which I'm so happy for. I'm happy that when I turn JavaScript off, I can use drag and drop. I'm happy that when I turn JavaScript off, the test cases and simple test are already expanded for me. That is good. But it is funny that graceful enhancements, it's just presumed that everybody's going to want to use the enhanced version. Like that's the presumption is, well, if you don't have JavaScript, okay, you can use this old clunky one that nobody likes, but if you have JavaScript, then of course you're going to want to use the new fancy one. Who wouldn't want to use the new one? When maybe when we do graceful enhancements like that, particularly if it's significant, maybe we should always be thinking to, are there a set of users that perhaps might not want this enhancement, and should we perhaps provide a graceful way to degrade back to the underlying structure of the document, my answer to that question would obviously be
yes. You said
yes.
That there are user agents. Is there a particular user agent that if we look for, we're going to hit all the screen readers, or is it the same thing with, it's basically the same situation as Mozilla and IE,
Absolutely.
You've got all these variations.
Yeah, and they're all user agents. Now, there are a few, I'll skip over to, actually, did we skip anybody? Because I think I went into that rant about forms after a question. Did we skip anybody else that to introduce themselves or to? Excellent.
My name is Omar Mikel.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm just interested in particularly more answers on Nanji's question about B7, because it actually ends up revealing other things, which is general best practices.
Right.
If I just take 2 seconds, I just want to point out that we've had code freeze already on Thursday or whatever that was. However, accessibility fixes are still allowed during the polish periods.
Well, that's great, because during my day job.
I know, honestly, because we hadn't seen it in a while. I was like, oh, no, did we scare away? But anyway, so we've been very focused on API fixes since that was cut off Thursday. However, now we're focusing now on CSS fixes, usability fixes, and accessibility is also in that sort of polish period. So
that's
if anybody
excellent.
In this room would like to make Drupal 7 the most accessible version of Drupal ever, which it already is, but I mean, it sounds like there's some really simple things, just a handful of patches that
exactly.
some people...
A handful of patches that could use just, you know, another set of eyes before, you know, they get set to RTBC. Because, you know, with such a very, and I mean tiny core group of the cross-section of persons who are interested in Drupal, who are interested in accessibility, who have development skills and have accessibility skills, when you put that Venn diagram together, there's a tiny little area in the center of people that actually know what they're talking about. And so it's helpful to have, you know, even if you're like, I don't know anything about accessibility, that's why I came here. Okay, well, great, but we're there and we know. So all you have to do is say what we've screwed up in any other aspect of, you know, the circles. You know, if it's a development thing, oh, you can't use that type of variable or that, or, you know, that's, I tested it in this other browser that you didn't think about testing it in, and it shows up all screwy, so we need to, but we need extra sets of eyes on some of the issues before they can get, you know, committed. And then there's other issues where, I guess the other huge one, which is not, yeah, I guess it is big enough, is vertical tabs. And vertical tabs are complicated because it's very much like the JavaScript question. I click on this thing, something pops out over here. I click on a different thing, that gets replaced with something different, which is simple enough, except it's really simple when you look at the screen and you have these tabs which visually are offset differently from the rest of the screen. You click on one and something, phew, you'd like, you know, like, oh, look, so clearly something just happened when I clicked on that thing because some big, huge section of the screen changed. It's more difficult if you're a screen reader user because, A, currently the vertical tabs, visual markup is meaningless. And the place that I find to be the best example for this is if you go to api.drupal.org and look up any function at all, you will know by looking at the screen what version of Drupal the code is for. By looking at the tabs across the top, if it's 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever, you'll know just by looking at the tab across the top of the screen. I have no idea. Well, I do have an idea because I go to the address bar and it's /6 or /7 at the end of the... But we probably shouldn't ask users to determine what page of content they're looking at by having to analyze the URL. That's probably a good rule of thumb in accessibility. If I have to break down the parts of a URL to figure out what page of content I'm viewing, somebody made a mistake somewhere. And the reason is, with tabs, whether it's just like the local tasks version of tabs, or whether or not it's vertical tabs as part of a form, what we're asking not only a web browser to do, but what primarily we're asking any user at all to do is we're asking them to interact with a web page, with a page of content, in a way that was never, ever envisioned by the XHTML spec. Nobody ever envisioned tabs, because if they did, there'd be a tab strip element, and there would be tab elements that could be nested within a tab strip. But that doesn't exist in the spec. In the same way that progress bars, you know, little like 1, 2, 20, 25, 90, 100, like when you're installing or doing anything else, that a progress bar is not a type of UI component that was ever envisioned as existing on a web page in the HTML spec. Or if it was, whoever came up with the idea was laughed at and voted down and it didn't go in there. But one way or the other, we don't have semantic structural ways to mark up a progress bar, or a tab strip, or a tab, or so, or an autocomplete box, or so many other drag and drop interface, all these things that are amazing and make Drupal fun and great and easy to make interactive websites with, because you don't have to, if you want a progress bar in a Drupal whatever site, in a contributed module you're making, you don't have to figure out how to make a progress bar, because there's already one in there. You don't have to figure out how to do autocomplete. I mean, you have to figure out how to use the one that's in there, but you don't have to figure out how to create an autocomplete function, because autocomplete's already in there. You can use the components that already exist, but unfortunately, those are components that we're asking people to take a step past the informational web to the interactive web. And hey, a lot of people aren't ready for that, and definitely a lot of browsers and assistive technology aren't ready. So what's the intermediary step that we can take to take things like a tab strip, which is visually presented, if the developer's doing their job right, as a tab strip? How do we take that and provide some sort of meaningful information behind it structurally, so that somebody who doesn't have access to the visual aspect of it can tell what the meaning and purpose of that set of links is? And
could that be a flag? Because you're listing a bunch of unrelated things, drop and drag tables, vertical tabs, all of which I see are JavaScript connected, and that if you turn JavaScript off, they become accessible.
Well, the tab strip is in no way JavaScript related. The vertical tabs are, but the
right,
tab
right.
strip itself, like local
not
tabs.
The, not the major vertical tabs. Vertical tabs, drop and drag, etc. If JavaScript is not enabled, they become accessible because they're all visible and
exactly.
it no longer does that. If there is a way we could flag it so we say, okay, this has an accessibility issue, whether it's a permission, whether it's a theme decision, that I want to see this theme with no accessibility problems, where it turns off that piece of the JavaScript so that
right.
that doesn't happen, but the rest of it does.
That's the solution that we're aiming at with the table drag. With table drag, we essentially want to add the functionality to any page that's loading the table drag JavaScript. We want to add some sort of flag or something to say, can I please turn that off? Not all the JavaScript on the page, but the JavaScript associated with the table drag, I'd like that to be turned off. I want my unadulterated table here, and I don't want you to hide anything or add anything. I just want the way it was supposed to be, without me having to click on tools and options and thing and whatever and disable JavaScript and click OK and move my, block up or down one row and then go back to tools and options and whatever and click on enable JavaScript and click OK. And then to, like, later on in the day have somebody say, oh, no, we want that moved back where it was before. So, oh, okay. And maybe I should just design a macro or something that turns.
We can pass variables to JavaScript. I'm just wondering if there was a variable that we set that says accessibility on, and then each of these JavaScripts went ahead and checked that and said, oh, this accessibility is on, I'm not going to run, I'm going to just stop. That would solve some of this.
That would, but that causes a couple problems. And I guess it doesn't cause problems. Well, it causes a perceptual problem. The perceptual problem is that our community's way of solving problems is by ignoring them as opposed to looking for more creative solutions to the problem. And for the table drag thing, we just have to get rid of the JavaScript part for right now. But there are ways to make it work. There are, and that's what the people at the ATRC at the University of Toronto, what they do there is they're actually working on, In a perfect world, it would be possible to take their project and blend it with Drupal and everybody would be happy. But for a couple of reasons, that's not possible. They're working on something called Fluid. And Fluid is a jQuery-based, basically UI set of toolkit of jQuery-based UI components. There's spinners, there's inline edit controls, there's reorder controls where you can reorder images or anything, any type of element you want. You can reorder them with a keyboard on, and all of these multiple file uploads. You can pause your upload partway through the file and start it up again. That uses a bit of a flash component in it. All sorts of neat little UI components that are accessible because they've put the time and energy into identifying the problems and creating the solutions to ensure that all of these fancy widgets they're creating are accessible. Now, Fluid is a jQuery-based one, which makes it more likely that some of those ideas could slide into Drupal, but there's other, the Dojo project is enhancing the accessibility of their UI components. Yahoo's UI thing, most of their components, or I'll say some of their components, are accessible components. When you go to yahoo.com, if you use a modern screen reader and web browser, the list of search suggestions is accessible. You can arrow up and down through the search suggestions with a screen reader and hear them spoken out loud just as if you were doing it without a screen reader. So it's possible to solve a lot of these problems without having to disable things, but just trying to see what is the creative way by which we can add the required information in to make this accessible. But for some things, you can't do that, and for those things, you're right. We need a way, perhaps, whether it's a user preference that can be set and stored in the system or something that can say, I want to turn off the things that are going to break accessibility for which there's no better solution. And then obviously a system, a framework through which JavaScript-based or other, you know, possible things that cause problems can respect that option set by the user. Arguably, there could be a way to set it site-wide or something like that. And that does cause problems itself. You know, you have to educate the user. Somebody was suggesting about the vertical tabs, you know, well, we should make a really easy way. If somebody's at the bottom of a tab pane, we should make a really easy way for them to get back to the tab list. And they're suggesting, oh, we could use this keystroke or that keystroke or the other keystroke. And I'm like, those are excellent thoughts. How are we ever going to educate the users as to the fact that they can press whatever keystroke it is we decide upon to invoke this behavior? Because users are not expecting to be able to, I mean, from a user perspective, a user that hits a web page is not expecting some strange weirdo keystroke to do something. You've got to educate the users if you're going to do anything. And the same thing, if we set a flag, a way somebody could say, please enable accessibility enhanced version of this site, we need to educate the user about where to go to find that option to set it. And I mean, the biggest thing for a website is it's all about trapping somebody's interest on the first time they land on the site. And if you don't do that, they're likely not going to land on the site a second time to figure out where that option is. And so there are some pragmatic problems to that approach, but for some issues, that might be the approach that needs to be taken.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, if there are user agents, and we can figure out, okay, this person's using one that's an accessibility.
Yeah, unfortunately, that would be like such an awesome, solve so many of the world's accessibility problems. There's no way for a screen reader is a user agent and can grab the DOM and interact. There's no way for the DOM, for whatever reason, there's no way for the DOM to reach out and know what you... It can't set, oh, Firefox or IE, or it doesn't tell you that you're using a screen reader, unfortunately.
What I was thinking was the opposite, that here Drupal gets the user agent, among other things. It says, oh, they're using this screen reader. I'm going to set that accessibility variable, and now suddenly all of these JavaScripts that have accessibility issues will turn off.
Right.
The rest of them will all stay in there. We could do that today.
We can't, because the JavaScript has no way of interrogating what screen reader...
It doesn't need to, that's what I'm saying. All we're doing for the JavaScript is saying, we're setting a variable in Drupal that says, Drupal says any JavaScript that's going to run that has accessibility issues, you're not going to...
But how are we deciding whether or not to set that variable?
From the user agent, because Drupal's setting that as part of the page.
Right, but there's no way for Drupal or JavaScript to assess whether or not a screen reader is in use. PHP, there's no way for your code on any level, JavaScript, PHP, nothing, know whether or not
If it's a user agent, Drupal can see that.
Okay, but I'm telling you, guaranteed 100%,
No, it's not going to be 100%, but it could be a list.
Okay, but it's not. I promise you, they're not listed. It shows up as the browser you're interacting through, not as...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sadly, that would have solved so many problems in my past life if if there was a way to go, oh, look, you're using JAWS, or, oh, you're using VoiceOver, and to be able to alter the presentation accordingly. That would be, unfortunately, technically, by the user agent guidelines, it's a user agent, but uses the browser as an intermediary. And so it's the browser's credentials that get sent to the page or
I thought they were actually setting something different in the user agent.
But I'll actually touch on,
I just had a question about that. You were talking about, like, for example, on like api.drupal.org. So if you can't tell if someone is using a screen reader, is there some, like, this is a really stupid question, I know, but is there some way of presenting, like writing, oh, now you're looking at the function definition for Drupal version 5 or Drupal
version 6? Here's the solution, and I don't think it's been committed yet, but here's the solution we came up with. And the solution was this. We have a list of items, mm-hmm. which are the tabs, one and only one of which is selected. Now you can have a primary and a secondary tab strip in which one is selected in the primary and a different one selected, but per tab strip, there can only be one item selected. Mm-hmm. So is there a way that we could textually indicate that that item is selected? So when I'm hitting the down arrow here, 5, 6, 7, selected. Oh, okay, I know that 7, this one here, this list item, is selected.
And there... general questions.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear about what's at stake on the developer side, but I'm more of a teamer, so maybe I don't know if you have enough time today to do this, but...
About 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
So what are the best practices in it with Xen, for instance? Why does it do the job, or what are the things to do and not to do?
Well, I'll touch on two things that will answer that. The first one, which is finishing about the tabs, we can put the word selected because it's themable. Like, you know, there's a way to say which one of these is selected. Oh, this one is. And we can add any text beside that we want. But anybody looking at the screen probably doesn't want to see 4, 5, 6, and then a different color shade outline and the word selected beside the thing. One of the, thank God it took 3 years, classes that finally made it into the system CSS file for Drupal is a class with the name element hyphen, well, there's two actually. One's element hyphen hidden, which just does, element hidden is display none, I think is all it does. Mm-hmm. Which is, now display none is respected by screen readers. If you set an element to display none, a screen reader will ignore that element in the same way that a browser ignores displaying it on the screen. Okay. The same way visibility hidden, a screen reader respects the fact that you don't want the user to have that information and will not expose it to them. So the first class that was defined was element hyphen hidden, and that just does the regular display none, because we figured if we're going to do the one, we might just as well do them both at the same time. The one that's most important, though, is element hyphen invisible. And what that does, well, it does exactly, and we fought forever over the name of that. But what it does is, I think the definition is position absolute, overflow hidden, height zero. Oh, there's probably one more thing in there. But what it does is it makes it so the element is invisible, that it takes up zero screen real estate, but it does it in a way that screen readers don't think it's supposed to be hidden.
That's what I wanted to know. Is there yes. a way that we can present just extra explanatory text? Like
only
this
to a screen reader user.
Exactly.
And so the emphasis there is not to every assistive technology user, not to a magnifier user,
okay.
and not to a keyboard, but there are using element invisible, you can mark up any element as only available to a screen reader user or those who have style sheets turned off. And the other one thing I'll touch on really quickly is, as far as standards, the WCAG 2.0, which is a W3C recommendation, priority one, which Drupal Core for the most part hits the priority one requirements. That's the best practice. I don't like Xen myself because it's a content first system. It's content first in DOM order, or in document order, I should say, not in visual display. You can make it however you want visually. I don't like content first. Other people disagree with me who use screen readers. For the most part, a site is going to have menus and whatever first, and the content down where you would typically put content, regardless of the source order. I want to hit a website and get the information in the same order that everybody else gets it in. And if I want to, I can skip down to the content, but I don't want to have a system set up where I'm being presented with the, but that's really my only downfall that I see of the Zen theme. There's other things, and they're not specific to the Zen theme, but just all the other things, whether or not breadcrumb was another thing I'll bring up. The theming function for a breadcrumb currently in Drupal 6 just goes link, greater, link, greater, link, greater, link. And that's a list of links that has, for me as a screen reader user, because I don't see where it's visually presented on the screen, really very little context about what those links are about and how they're related to each other. But if you use that element, and what happened in Drupal 7, which has been committed, if you look at the differences between the two theming functions for breadcrumb from 6 and 7, we've put in code there that puts an invisible, only visible to screen reader users heading in there that explains this is a list of breadcrumb navigation links or something to that effect. Anyway, so lots of different little things that are just adding the additional information to make sure that somebody who can't visually associate the relationship between whether or not it's, we can tell this tab selected because it's an offset color, or we can tell that these three links are associated with each other because they're grouped together and apart from anything else. If there's a way to be able to add a little bit of additional language, not verbose, but just a little bit of additional language, to be able to provide more context, that would be, apart from the weird, you know, table drag or the form labeling things, adding the few little tidbits of additional context to make a site perceptible and understandable would be the biggest thing to do on any, whether it's Drupal or not. Just luckily that in Drupal we now have ways where, for example, a list of links, I think it is, which I think it's theme links, or I forget what the function is, now accepts a parameter for whether or not you want to provide a heading and the text for that heading, and whether or not you want that to be visible or invisible before a list of links. So if you're going to put a list of 25 links in the middle of a document, you know, or on a page somewhere, or in a module, or in a block, you now have a way to provide an invisible heading that will provide context for those links to users of screen readers. Or if you don't make it invisible, it will provide context to those links for everybody. And I am like a hardcore, the prettiest, most award-winning, beautiful website design in the world is absolutely useless if it doesn't serve the purpose of converting site visitors into customers or whatever else it is you're trying to convert them into. And so if adding a little thing somewhere, even if somebody goes, I don't know, that doesn't look as good as it did when you didn't have that little piece of text on there, I would say, well, why don't we just wait to see whether or not it's functional and suck it up if you don't like how it looks, because the goal is to get somebody to click a button to do something. And if making a site a little less pretty convinces people to click the button more often, then that's what we want to do for our clients, because though they might think that they're paying us to make a beautiful website, what you really need to educate a client that you're doing is making them a functional website, because that's what, at the end of the day, they want, and they don't understand that there is not always a direct 100% correlation between beautiful design and functionality. And so that would be, not to say that accessibility has to in any way impact visual design, but there are some times when you might choose to impact visual design, and that might actually end up being a win for everybody. Just to close, I was assessing the University of New Brunswick library website at one point in time, and on the main page of the library website, there are 127 links. Now, as a screen reader user, I'm a little baffled by that, because I'm like, you know, by the time, you know, you can't go, oh, these ones are grouped over here and these ones are grouped over here. But it's anybody, there is no user in the world who wants 127 links on the front page of a website. I can get, and if they do, they're wrong about what they want in life. Because there's no way to know what one of those links you want. If there's 20 links and I click on one and then 20 more, that's okay, but 127. So sometimes just because, and I can't imagine that having actually looked any good, but just because a user or a client says this is what I want does not always mean that that's actually what they need. And it's up to us to gracefully help them understand what's best, and then to do whatever it is they tell us they're going to pay us for doing anyway. So that would be, and I think that's the way accessibility goes. Tell the client what we understand with our expert knowledge to be the best way to do something, and then accept that they're the one paying the bill and do what they tell us to do at the end of the day. But to make sure that we provide them the opportunity to do the best way, as opposed to just, you know, whatever they might seem to think is the best. And they're coming to us to design a website because they don't know how to do it themselves. And so they need to put themselves into this place of accepting the fact that maybe, and not for every web development company by far, but there are some companies like Open Concept, like other companies I'm sure represented in this room, where we actually are the experts and know how to do it right. And so trust us, don't trust your own instinct as a client. Anyway, unless there's any other questions.